Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Gina Bianca podcast, where we talk about life, business, entrepreneurship, the beauty industry, and beyond. My name is Gina Bianca, life and business coach, salon owner, educator, mastermind mentor, and your host of the Gina Bianca podcast. Discover the essence of Italian craftsmanship and beauty with Alpha Parf Milano Professional. From revitalizing hair care and treatments to vibrant color collections, experience the luxury of the Italian house of beauty. Celebrating a global commitment to elevate the beauty craft through advanced formulation, technology, practical salon solutions, and consistently superior results, one bottle at a time. Alpha Parf Milano Professional. Where glamour meets sophistication and hair care perfection. Product Club is a premium hair color tools and accessories brand that provides high quality tools, apparel, back bar essentials, and valuable hair color education. They offer the most innovative products to help professional hair colorists elevate their craft and excel in their work behind the chair. One of Product Club's latest products is the Universal Brush Duo. This dynamic set of color brushes includes two brushes, one with crimped bristles and one with straight bristles for maximum color distribution and precise applications. The brushes have strong synthetic bristles, comfortable handles, and long flexible tips for easily sectioning the hair. This is a great set of brushes that you can use for multiple hair color techniques, and it's on sale for the entire month of March. Originally $5 a set, you can purchase the set for only $3.50 until March 31st. Shop now at productclub.com. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Gina Bianca podcast. We're back with another amazing episode of Salon Ownership Unfiltered. I have here with me a guest named Kelly Kane. She is on Instagram at Scissors Makes Sense. I follow her and I thought of her when I was doing this episode. She's a salon owner in Richmond, Virginia, owns 1213 Hair Studio. So welcome, Kelly. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I love all of your content. So I was really excited when you had time to do this.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Awesome. So for my audience who might not know who you are, can you please introduce yourself, share a little bit about what you do, where you're based out of, all that?
Yeah. So I own a salon, 1213 Hair Studio in Richmond, Virginia. I've had that for 14 years, which is just crazy to really think about. I started with one stylist. Now I'm up to 13 stylists. And I really learned all the lessons the hard way. So I was really fortunate to win a contest with Nick Arojo years ago, where I got to study under him and learn all about how he runs his business. And I had a lot of people reaching out about how I was turning my salon and just this neighborhood small business salon into a success. And so eventually I turned that into a full-blown coaching program. So now I coach other hair salon owners how to run their small business successfully, but also with fulfillment in the process.
I love that. I love Nick. He was one of my guests.
Yeah, I love Nick.
I love Nick so much. He's such a huge mentor.
He is. And he had a class. He doesn't offer it anymore. It was called the Success Symposium when I was going through my little 15 minutes of fame with him. And that was just a game changer for me. I learned so much, not just from him, but his mentors. And so a lot of that's what I share. But I think it's really easy to go to a big business class like that and get these eyes of potential and all these possibilities when maybe that wasn't what you wanted. And I had to really realize, like, I just wanted a salon that provided a nice lifestyle for me and my family, and learning how to take some of those bigger business principles back to a small business and make them work.
I love that. So what, I've been asking all of the salon owners this question and just on this series, and I'm just curious, do you have any like background of business training? Are you like, for me, I went to hair school, I have my Cosmo license and I've been figuring it out along the way, but I didn't have any like prior business education. Do you have any prior business education?
I had zero. Absolutely zero. I had a husband who was working in corporate. And so when I first opened, I was really leaning on him and hoping that, you know, I could be the talent and he could be the business. But I learned from day one that was not going to happen, because it was as if I would just go home and tattletale and then he'd come in and clean it up. And that was like no respect for leadership. So very early on, I realized I have to learn this. And I've made a million mistakes in the process. And I feel like I have a million apologies that I would make to those early employees that I had as I was figuring it all out. But, you know, I eventually got there. And so that's my goal now, is to help people get there a little faster than I got there.
Yeah, I can relate to that, because when I was starting out, I was 23 when I opened my salon. And like, I didn't know what I was doing. And I'm the type, like, I'll learn something, but I don't really fully learn it. I'll like get an inspiration and then I'll like run with it. Like I had like seen concepts about team-based, for example, and then I just made it my own.
Yeah.
And yeah, it didn't work. So there's a lot of things I did in the beginning where I feel like I owe a million apologies to, but like at the end of the day, like nobody's perfect. And if you could own up to that, and if you can like take those mistakes and turn them into lessons, that's like what it's all about, right?
Yeah. And we don't know what we don't know. And so, you know, the other lesson on the side of that for me is that I also don't want to hold people to an experience I had with them 10 years ago. It's very easy for us to experience something of someone and then like stick with that for the rest of our lives because they treated you a certain way one time. And you're like, no, I'm sure they've grown quite a bit in that 10 years. And so it's really taught me lessons as a leader, but also I think running a business teaches you a lot of personal development lessons as well.
100%. I saw this post like not that long ago. I think it was over the weekend. And it was like, there people, every single person you meet has a different version of you.
Yeah.
In their head. Like strangers on the street, people you've worked with, family members, kid, your kids, your spouse, like everyone has like this like version of you based on like what they experience. And it's like, only you know who you truly are.
Yeah, that's mind blowing.
It's like such a crazy thought. And I was like, damn. And it really brought me in, like, as human beings, we go like, we can go in all different directions, but I went straight to like my early business owner days. And I was just like, God, I didn't know anything. And like, that's like why I share a lot now, mainly, is because it's almost like you don't want someone else to like go through those things. You know, like 100%. Go through the hard way. And that's why like a lot of business owners become educators and coaches, because it's like, look what I went through. You don't have to do this the hard way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, it's the lessons. Like I love sharing the lessons, but I also love sharing the stories, because I think people are so hard on themselves when things aren't going right. And they will look at someone like you or I, who's been doing it for, you know, however many years, and they're just comparing themselves. And I'm like, no. Let me share a story or two of what I've experienced as a salon owner. I mean, I've had people look me in my face and tell me they don't respect me as a leader. And that's a tough pill to swallow, but you know, you have two choices in that. You can be offended by it, or you can take it and really say, okay, why are they saying that to me? And what can I do to be better? And I always try to choose that route of like, I'm just trying to be better than the person I was yesterday.
100%. So tell me about 1213. What's the business model? What's the vibe? Tell me a little bit about your salon now.
Yeah, we are a team salon. We're commission based. So we don't do team pay. And, you know, I've really adapted over the years to just kind of give that commission with freedom. Because I think that's why a lot of times, you know, I think a lot of commissioned owners have held the reins too tight. And so the team left wanting more of that freedom. And I think that there's a way to have both. And I really like to kind of call the commission salon a done for you service, because it's like either way, the things are going to have to get done, and either way, they're going to have to get paid for. So if you want to come in and just be an artist and do what you love doing, I will do the rest for you. And that's really what that contribution to the salon is versus being independent where you're really in control of all the money, but you're handling that yourself. So 1213 is really designed that way where I really support my stylist as artist. And then I take care of all of the back end things so they can really just do hair and go home and not have to think about it.
Love that. And you've been that way since the beginning or it's been adapting?
Oh, it's been evolving and adapting for sure. Yeah. I mean, those are all of those hard lessons learned, but I find that it works. And I find that, you know, you really can step into leadership in a way where there's so much mutual respect there. And it works really beautifully. And a lot of things that I think we hold on to as salon owners really just don't matter. I think a lot of those small details that we hold on so tightly to in the big picture don't matter.
Like what?
I want to tell you guys about the best kept secret in the beauty industry, Marlo Beauty Supply. I used to spend so much time searching for the salon essentials I needed at the best prices that worked for my business. As soon as I found Marlo, the search was over. Marlo Beauty Supply is a one-stop shop that is only for beauty professionals, meaning their prices are super low and they don't sell to your clients. Their shipping is so fast and ordering is easy. Just make a free account at marlobeauty.com or place an order by phone with their amazing customer care team. They ship right to you, leaving you more time for your business. Head to marlobeauty.com to create your free account and to start shopping for all of your salon and spa needs.
You know, I always like to say kind of separate out your pet peeves from your issues. That's kind of what I'm known for saying all the time. And it's like, you know, it's just these little details that I don't know. I'm trying to think of one on the top of my head where it's like, you can just come in and be so frustrated by little things like a sink full of dishes. And it's like, we do have a policy in the salon that after you do your color, you're going to wash your bowl and like help out. But if I come in there and I see dishes, just clean them up. Maybe that person got behind, or maybe they had to go run to the bathroom, or like, you know, and just like all of the little things that frustrate you is just really checking in with yourself and saying, is this just my own pet peeve right now? Or is this like my building's on fire? This is a building issue, a business issue. And I think that that really helps to take a lot of the daily frustration out of running your business.
I think that that's super valid. And transparently, at the network, which is my salon, having 30 booth renters and I was talking to Victor about this on one of the interviews too. And we have like a freaking magical fairyland here. Like it is amazing. We have like the done for you rental model.
Yeah.
The done for you rental model, which shouldn't even exist, honestly, because people take it for granted. And when people leave dishes in the sink, I get so angry because it's so disrespectful. My staff gets so angry, like my support staff, my managers, they feel like they're getting spit in the face. And even our guest care team is like, what the fuck? Like, why don't these people clean up after themselves? And I totally agree with you. Like, it can get to a point where it's like bad or whatever, but like we could have people stealing. We could have people doing drugs. We could have, you know, people fighting or drama or gossip or like those kinds of things. And like over the last like month, I've been thinking about it. It's like, you know, instead of on our town hall meeting, talking about dishes for 15 minutes, just clean the dishes. Just clean the dishes. Like, it's like not even worth it anymore because at the end of the day, like with 30 people, you are going to have people who run behind. You are going to have people who are late. You are going to have people who just forget, you know, who threw them in, went to the bathroom, went on their phone or something. And then they just spaced on it. You know what I mean? So it's hard to separate the pet, like you said, like the pet peeves from is my building on fire. And that's just a personal example. Like we don't have like major issues here. But those little issues can sometimes like fill the space with negativity when you don't even want it to.
100%. Yeah. And I really try my best to save any issues for like a one-on-one meeting, because how many people have worked at a place where you never know who your boss is going to be that day? You'll walk in and the first thing is like, we need to talk, or you were late, or, you know, and they just jump on you for this like kind of small thing. And it could be something that could be saved for their monthly sit down where it's like, hey, I observed that you were late 3 times this month. And it just really helps that flow of the day-to-day be consistent. And that's one of my biggest things, is trying to create anxiety-free leadership in my team. I never want them to feel anxious coming to work. I never want them to feel anxious sitting down with me. Now, I will say, back just to the example of the dishes, there's a difference between like someone ran behind and left it, and then someone's consistently doing it, because that then isn't about the dishes. It's now about a level of disrespect for the rest of the team and the policies. And I think that that does warrant a conversation, but, you know, but if it is just that like one-off thing, like, just clean it and keep going, and don't let it kind of, you know, interrupt the flow of the day. And that's a small example, but I think that's the key, is just trying to create an environment where people feel like they know exactly who they're going to get every single day.
I think that that's huge, because I have, working in my salon, a lot of anxious people. And I feel like a lot of people are just anxious these days. And if I ever said to someone, hey, can we talk in my office? They would have a literal panic attack. Even if I was like, smile, smile, heart, heart, like, I love you. They just expect the worst, not from me, but in general, like, yep, being interrupted in the middle of the day like that. I think that that's a really important thing to be mindful of. It's like, when are you coaching people? When are you having these conversations? I love the monthly option instead of, you know, sometimes with the monthly option, though, I feel like it almost might feel like you're dumping on them if you have like a bunch of things you want to talk to. So I like coach in the moment, but I also like, more lately, like over the last like 4 or 5 years, realize that people are just anxious. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm anxious too. Like, if someone texts me at 9 in the morning, they're like, hey, can we set up a time to talk? I'm like, oh God, just tell me now.
Yeah, I try to be very mindful of that, actually. So if I do have something, I try to think about like, how would I feel? I always ask myself, like, how would I feel in this moment? Or what would I want in this moment? And so if I am sending a message like that, I will say, hey, can we find 10 minutes to talk? I just want to discuss your schedule, you know, but I always kind of give that qualifier at the end so that they're like, oh, okay, it's just my schedule or something like that. But
they know what to expect.
Yes. But I think, and sometimes, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Gina, but don't you find some people get a little bit of a kick out of like making people feel that way, where it's like, yeah, we need to, like, they like it. They like knowing that they're leaving someone on pins and needles. I personally don't, because I don't like,
that.
Yeah. So I try my best to kind of add that qualifier in there of like, hey, I'd like to chat with you. Nothing, you know, important. I just want to discuss your schedule or something like that, so that they feel a little comfort and that it's not something that they need to sit and dwell on until we actually sit down.
Mm-hmm. I would actually prefer if someone wrote me out an email.
Yeah.
And just emailed me, because mm-hmm. then I would have all of the information and then we could set up a time to talk and I have context.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I would much rather email.
Yeah.
I'd much rather an email than like, hey, can we talk? And I'm just like, okay, so you're leaving.
Like, exactly.
literally like the anxiety. So I understand, like, my managers, I will be like, hey, let's chat, head to my office whenever, everything is great, you're doing amazing, I want to talk about X, Y, and Z. But I'm never like, hey, can you come into my office? My husband, he is a part of the business. He does all the financials and everything now. He does like all the QuickBooks and everything. And he had asked, he was in my office and he asked my manager, hey, can you come in to my office at the end of the day?
Yeah.
And she was like, am I getting fired? And he was like, no, like he didn't realize that, like, how you approach something like that. Like, people are just anxious.
Yeah. I think it really, you know, it talks to like, we do live in this world where we're almost always waiting for like the ball to drop. It's, you know, it's just, there's always something happening. It doesn't even have to be at work, but I think we live in that heightened state of like, when's the ball going to drop? And when things are good or too good, we're like, oh, something's got to happen. So we just instantly start assuming the worst.
I like that you said you put a lot of focus on creating an anxiety free environment. I think that's really something to be mindful of. I love that. Awesome. So my next question that I've been asking all of our guests is, what's your daily role? Like, are you behind the chair? What are you doing like day to day as a salon owner?
Yeah, I'm really fortunate because we've created the systems in a way that it really operates itself, whether I'm there or not. I do go in on Mondays and I do anywhere between 5 and 7 hours of clients. And honestly, they're the ones that I honestly would bend over my kitchen sink because I just love them, you know, and it's more that I'm not letting them go versus them, you know, letting me go. So I only do, yeah, about 5 to 7 hours on Mondays. Tuesdays is now my coaching business. So I coach other salon owners. I use Wednesday for what I call a chaos day because I think that's really important for salon owners to have, because if we jam pack our schedules 100% and then chaos does happen and we don't have any capacity, it can just throw off everything. So I talk about the importance of self-care. So if I don't have any chaos, I'll try to find something. Like sometimes it's a doctor's appointment. Sometimes it's a massage or a pedicure. Other times it's, I need to go in and address a redo situation because that stylist is too busy to handle it. And I don't want to ask them to come in or stay late or put them with another stylist. That's rare, you know, the washing machine bust. And now I've got to go to Home Depot and pick up a new one. There's all kinds of things that I can fill my time with. Thursdays are really like an admin day for me. So that's where I'm doing budgets and schedules and anything administrative. And then Friday I use to do in-person training with the apprentices. And that's my full schedule.
Awesome. And you have the weekends off.
Yes, we are closed Saturday and Sunday.
Wow, I love that. My salon was closed Saturday and Sunday too.
Yeah, I love it. We did that after COVID and it's worked beautifully. And my team was really scared of it, but our clients all responded with, you know, good for you guys. And I'm just like, really, we live in a world where we make appointments for everything, for the doctor, the dentist, you know? And so I'm like, people make appointments for their hair. We do accommodate evening hours to make that happen throughout the week. So we double shift and it works out great.
That's awesome. My next question is, what is your like ideal employee look like? So someone's coming in for an interview, like what are you looking for?
Yeah.
Like, how are you finding them?
Yeah. I learned this from Nick. It's like hire the heart and train the hands, which I think is really important. So when I do an interview process, I really start off by just asking them some questions. I look for the red flags about like their previous work experience and things like that. But then I almost do like what most people do as an onboarding, I do during the interview. And I tell our entire brand story. I say, this is what I'm looking for. These are my policies. These are my expectations. And then I will have them leave and be in touch with me. So if they are overwhelmed by everything that I have in place, I know that's not my person. And if they reach out and say, wow, I've never seen anything like this, this is amazing, then I'm like, that's my person. So an ideal candidate for me is just someone who has incredible work ethic, a lot of integrity, very good with people. Like I said, I can train the hands where the skills maybe are falling a little bit short. Yeah, just someone with a lot of heart and passion for people.
Love that. And how are you finding people? Are they reaching out to you? Do you have any systems that you use to kind of like headhunt, or do you ever slide in DMs and try to poach people or recruit people that way? How do you find these people?
Yeah. You know, that's the $1 million question, right? Is how do we find people? And I think there's a bunch of different ways. For me, I'm lucky enough now with 14 years of, you know, experience and reputation, people will seek us out for employment. So I don't have to do a whole lot. But back in the day, you know, we did a lot of volunteering at the schools. So we would go into schools and mentor and really pour into them so that when they were leaving and looking for a salon, they would consider us. I'm not a huge fan of the DM poaching, just simply because I know, like, I don't want people doing it to my team, and I'm not worried about it. I don't think my team would leave. And a lot of times they come to me and show me and say it feels icky to them. Like they don't like it. So I know that's a tactic a lot of people use, and you know, I'm not necessarily against it one way or the other. It's just not for me. So I don't do that. The other thing that I really strongly believe in is hosting community events in your salon and getting people to come in for, you know, you could do I don't know, yoga for stylists or meditations, and just let them come in and see your culture, see what you offer, offer an educational class. And then if they're ever at a place where they're unhappy or seeking a change, then they may think of you and your environment. So I don't know that it's always like an overnight solution as much as like a long game of showing your support for their work and what they're doing in the industry as well.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. I love that. Now, do you, I know you said that you are into like, you know, commission, but with the flexibility or with, I forget the exact words that you used. I'm sorry. Do you like the flexibility and that's what you're trying to implement into your space and what you have implemented. Do your employees get to make their own schedule? Because I imagine being closed Saturdays and Sundays, you know, if you have everyone wanting to work 10 to 4, like as a salon, you can't really function that way. Like, how do you accommodate guests if you have no one who wants to work nights or something? Like, how much freedom and flexibility do you give them? Is there like a benchmark they have to hit where they can make their own schedule, or is that something that you're doing?
Yeah. So we're open 9 to 9 during the week. So 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. I have 5 levels in the salon. So my level 1 and level 2, they will do a staggered shift of either 9 to 3 or 3 to 9. And we coach them and let them know that they have to just, I always say, grow the herd. So you have to grow your herd. And most people either want a morning before work or they need an evening after work. And so those are going to be kind of the most requested times for new clientele. So we put our level 1 and level 2 either at a 9 to 3 or 3 to 9 shift, and they stagger. So we always have opening and closing coverage. Then once they become a senior level into either senior master executive, that's when they earn the ability. So they have more of a dedicated clientele that's willing to book those appointments. And so those, that's like an earned, I don't want to say privilege, but it's like an earned privilege that once they reach that point, they get to customize their schedule and they can continue to do the 5 days a week. A lot of them choose a 4-day work week and they'll either do 8 or 9 hour shifts. But I do have one on my team. He likes to do like 3 10s or 3 12s. And that way it gives him, you know, the extra time off. So it really just depends on what they like. And we stagger that as well so that the days off are not the same. And that way that opens up another shift for a stylist if we want to have them come in.
Love that. Yeah, you have it figured out. You've been doing it. You know what you're talking about. I love that.
I learned that from Nick. He had a mentor, Jerry Gordon, and they had, I think it was a 900 square foot salon in Chicago, and they were making millions out of it from double shifting. So I learned all of that from Jerry and Karen Gordon from Chicago.
And you have one location, right?
I have 2. It is one location with like additional workspace. So my space was not available for expansion. So there was a building that was literally like one door down from us. We took that over and we put workspaces in there, so it's 2 locations, but we operate as one.
Nice. I always say that my biggest mistake that I made as a salon owner was expanding too quickly. Like I had, I believe like 1800 square feet and my rent was $1,800 a month. It was cheap, right? And I had like 4 chairs in there, but like I could have had way more. I could have like really maximized, but instead I was like, no, I want bigger. I want like, you know, more for ego than anything. And the double shifting, I always tell people now because of that mistake that I made, I'm like, do not expand, do not open another location, do not do anything until you're fully maximizing everything you could be doing. And people are like, but we are. It's like, but are you? Like, you're open 9 to 9.
Yeah.
People have 9 to 5.
Yeah, we had that. Yeah. So that was something that I learned from Nick and Jerry was just like, when you are paying rent on your building, you're paying for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if you are not at a point where you're maximizing that to its fullest potential, then why would you expand? Why would you, you know, have a second location and all of that? So it's like, and I mean, not that you should be open 24 hours a day, but you know, even in my salon, if I felt like I wanted to grow again, I would probably open up Saturday and Sunday before I would consider expanding. So really, if you're doing 9 to 9 double shifting 7 days a week, and now you don't have room or you're busting at the seams, I think that's a great opportunity to expand. But like you said, I have people that are like, you know, I think it's time for a second location. And I'm like, well, tell me about your hours. And like, well, we work like 10 to 6, you know, Tuesday through Saturday. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much missed opportunity in what you have. Why would you bring on more overhead when you could expand where you're at and, you know, make way more of a profit?
Yeah, I think a lot of salon owners fear asking their staff to work inconvenient hours or staffing, finding people who will do that. But like in reality, there are people who want to work nights and weekends and have their days free. Like you just have to find the right people or split the load.
Yeah. And I think it's helping them understand, like my younger stylist, that they'll get to pick their schedules. Cause a lot of people now right out of school want to go independent because they're like, oh, I want it my way. But the reality is, when you don't have any clientele, you have to really think about the people and like what their schedule is like, you know. And that's the thing, is like people are wanting those evening hours and those before. It's easier to come in before work and go to work late than it is to leave work early and try to come in. And so I just let them know, like, we're putting you here not as like a punishment or not that you have to do your time. I actually am putting you here to help you because I want to fill your book as fast as I possibly can so that I can raise your price and give you a custom schedule. But sometimes you do have to put a little foundational work in order to be able to do that.
Yeah, you can't always have everything you want right away. And, you know, a lot of people go straight to booth rental. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes them double the time to grow.
Yeah. I don't know how they're doing it. I look back at my career and there's no way I could have come right out of school into a booth rental situation. I admire those who do. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I look at
it's definitely not impossible. There are unicorn people who make it happen, but for, I would say 8 out of 10 people, they struggle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have a lot of them that come back because they realize, you know, it's, I always say, like, you do get to manage all of the money, but you're not keeping all of the money. And it sometimes is doing twice the amount of work for the same amount of pay. And I think sometimes people don't realize how much admin work really goes into running a business.
Properly.
Yeah. And you now have two roles. You're a business owner and you're a stylist. And, you know, for me personally, like I said, I don't knock anyone's decisions, but I'm like, if I'm going to do all that work, I'm going to own a salon. Cause you know, it's like, it's really hard to be the stylist and the business owner with no additional support.
Yeah. 100%. And then once you start getting that support, the overhead is insane.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. The overhead is insane. Amazing. So you do give them some flexibility with their schedule. They have to earn it a little bit, but you're pretty flexible with the schedule. So this is more, since you're a coach, a question that I've been asking the coaches, what are you hearing from salon owners? Like, what are they struggling the most with today? Like something like in 2023, this is like the most common challenge salon owners have. And like, what advice do you give them?
The number one thing, I mean, I have three main pillars that I see as kind of, you know, an issue. It's systems, leadership, and financials. But number one, hands down, is financials. They just don't understand it. They know there's money in, money out. I think a lot of salon owners feel that if they're keeping like a register, that they're budgeting, and it's the opposite. So it's like they're spending and then they're just tracking, whereas like teaching them how to really identify a plan. So it's looking at the money before you spend it. And a lot of times I think that they are borrowing information from places they've been before. They're taking the pricing from where they were. They're doing what makes sense. They don't know why they're charging what they're charging.
They're paying their staff illegally or whatever. Yeah, like there's a lot of stuff that like they, well, that's how it was for me.
Yes, a lot of that. And so, you know, that's the biggest piece. My first step with anyone, if they're like looking to put a toe into coaching, is like, I have a 3-call package. So I keep it very short and concise. And we just go through understanding your business numbers and like, what does it take to run your actual business? Then we go into their pricing to make sure it's reflective of what the business needs. And then the third step is just how to set up a budget and how to operate it monthly so that you can, you know, be a month ahead and be debt-free in your business as much as you, you know, want to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest gifts that I ever had as a salon owner was being kind of broke and I had to do a lot of stuff myself. And I got QuickBooks 2016, the desktop version, not QuickBooks Online, which I have now.
Yeah.
But QuickBooks 2016, the desktop version, I had to print off my bank statement and enter in every single deposit and every single withdrawal and categorize it and then reconcile. And if it was off by a penny, I would have to go through and do it again and go through and do it again. And I, like, there were times where it's off by 17 cents.
Yeah.
And I would be spending 4 hours on it. It was not a good use of my time, but it was the best use of my time because I really learned where my money was going. Like, I was an overspender. I said yes to everything. Even when we were ordering, like, we had 8 different lighteners. Like, what the f- do you need that for? You know what I mean? And we had, everyone had, like, you know, the throwaway gloves. We had so much waste. And like, my pro use was at like 24%. And like, if you're a salon owner listening, like, what should your pro use be at? Like 8% max?
Mine at 10. Yeah, mine's at 10%.
It's like, it should not be that high. And all that money could be profit. And, you know, in the moment I hated it and I would let 6 months of it build up and then I would just do it all in like 3 days and I wouldn't leave my office and I would be such a miserable freaking witch. That was not budgeting, right? That was what you're saying. Spending, doing things. Now, because I have the experience with understanding QuickBooks, it's like a completely different way to look at the vital signs of your business. What are you spending? What are the budgets? What should it be? And a lot of people, especially like 70 to 80% of the industry going booth rental, they don't have QuickBooks. They don't even have software to track their productivity rate. Like, it scares me. I teach classes all over the United States and in Canada, and the UK was a whole different ballgame. I teach these classes and I ask that, you know, if you're a booth renter, what are you using? Square? You have no reports. You really don't, you really can't tell how you're doing. Like, they don't even have salon software. And that's something I tell them, like, you're a stylist, get stylist software.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're going to be a business owner, salon owner, booth renter, whatever it is that you're doing, that second role is real. And you can like let it go and you might do okay for a couple of years, but it will build on you of like all the things you haven't done, all the things you need to do, and it'll really wear and tear on your confidence.
Yeah. And I find, you know, like with salon owners, they're not, they think they're successful because the bills are getting paid. The employees are getting paid and the bills are getting paid. But a lot of the ones that I work with, they're not paying themselves what they should be making. And they're definitely not profitable. And I'm like, you're doing twice as much work. What's the point? I, you know, if that was the way it was going to go, I would go back into a salon and make the same amount of money doing hair than doing all of this effort. And a lot of times I find it's the little things that they don't even look at. A lot of times they're giving LaCroix and, you know, organic granola bars to their guest and they're not paying themselves. And I'm like, you're literally, you know, I am here for a client experience. And I think that's important. But if your pricing is not where it needs to be, and you're not making a profit and paying yourself to run your business, let's get rid of the LaCroix and the granola bars. And I know that sounds so silly, but you know, it is those little tiny things that add up, the little Amazon purchases. And, you know, and a lot of times I think you look at the account and you see a balance in there that's like, oh, I can support this purchase, but you're not thinking ahead of all of the other things that are about to come out. And the first place people sacrifice is their profit and their income.
Mm-hmm. Or they just take draws and then are behind on their taxes for 5 years.
Yeah, that's scary. That's scary. Yeah.
That's what I did in the beginning. Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't know.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know. Like, you don't know what you don't know. And I think it's really, I think it's awesome to make mistakes and to learn from them and to not get in like this cycle of I know everything or, you know, I'm a victim, but to like make mistakes, figure it out, and then help other people. I think it's awesome. And we're both doing that. And that's, you know, really amazing. Instead of just being like, I'm perfect. It's like, hey, these are the things that you have to worry about. I've been there. I've done that. Like,
yeah, don't do what I did.
Exactly. So now I know you said like, let your pet peeves go, but do you have any pet peeves? You know, maybe someone's interviewing or maybe you've got someone in the salon. What are your pet peeves that like give you the ick?
Yeah. You know, again, it's the small things. I'm like you, I'm really blessed with a good team. Like they are professionals. A lot of them are, you know, they're a little on the older side and not like old, but you know, more just experienced. But you know, it's the little things that I'll notice. Lateness is a huge one. That is a huge pet peeve, is when people are running late and they're coming in and their client's sitting there and they've got their Starbucks in hand and setting up. It drives me crazy. Cleanliness is one, you know, where they're not really tidying up and cleaning up behind themselves. They're leaving color on the shampoo bowl. And, you know, that drives me absolutely crazy. And then I'll tell you one that's kind of silly, but it's when they decide to take initiative on something in my business and it's not a choice that I would make. And it's just that feeling of like, I would never choose that. Why did you do that? You know, the other day, one of my receptionists, she's so adorable and she's young. She had made this like mason jar out of highlighters and made it look like a floral arrangement. And if you knew my salon at all, like that is just not my brand. And so I walk up and I'm like, what is this? And she's like, oh, I put that there. And I'm like, okay, well, we're not going to do that. We're just, you know, we're just going to put that back. It doesn't fit the aesthetic. I don't remember what I said, but that kind of stuff where it's like, they think they're being helpful, but really it is so against like my branding, my personal choices that I'm just like, I would never, ever choose that. That there's just those little things can just drive you crazy.
I know. I agree. Okay. One more, I have a couple more questions, but we're winding down now. I've been asking every salon owner this: is your salon gratuity free?
Our salon is not gratuity free. However, if I had it to do again, like to start over from scratch, I would be gratuity free. I think
it really,
I would, but I think well, yes and no. Like I would be gratuity free in a certain way, but like I would never deny someone the opportunity to leave one if they wanted to. But I would try to take away that like expectation of a tip that we're a tipping salon. The issue is I started 14 years ago and it wasn't something we talked about. And so in order for me to do it now, I would have to guesstimate on what my team is making. And I would say it's between 20 and 30%. I would then have to raise the prices to make sure that my team was getting the equivalent of what they're used to making in getting tips. And then
so you don't allow the guests to make a decision. You're just like, you're tipping.
Yeah. And then you're just saying you know, it's like now we're tipless now, but your price just went up 30%. It's like, no, I don't think you're tipless. You just included it. Now I don't have a choice. So I just feel for me and my brand, like if I decided to commit to that, I know I could do it, but it works for us. You know, we still price our services so that we are fully compensated for the work that we do. And if a client leaves a gratuity, then, you know, it's a thank you gift and we say thank you and we accept it. But yeah, that's kind of where we stand.
I love that. I'm so against gratuity free. I think it's so stupid. Personally, just my personal beliefs, I think it's stupid. I think if you want to be a tipless salon, good, more power to you. Do whatever you want. It's your business. I don't care, whatever. But like, gratuities are appreciated, but never expected. Charge what you need to charge to make what you need to make. And don't be upset if someone can't afford or doesn't want to tip you. But like, why would you turn money away? I don't get it.
That's 100% our policy at the salon. So, and I think when I say I would do it again, I think it is that pressure of it, you know, and
I think it's silly.
Sometimes I do question, like, when I look at other professional industries, like I look at my attorney who's doing a service for me or my accountant and like, we're not tipping those. The only question I ever had is like, does the gratuity diminish our professionalism a little bit and like put us in a different category? But again, with all that said, none of it has ever prompted me to do away with it. So it's like you said, it's an option. I will not tolerate any discussion of tipping in the salon of like, she didn't tip or, cause I let my staff know you have been fully compensated for the work that you did. And some people have budgeted every dollar they have to come spend $300 or $400 on color. So if they can't leave a tip, there could be many reasons why, and we're not going to
don't take it personal.
Right. So
and my lawyer charges $300 an hour.
Yeah.
Charging $300 an hour, I'm not going to be offended for tipping. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's like just one of those controversial topics that gets people to like question themselves.
Yeah.
And for context, every single salon owner, I think we did 16 interviews so far, is like, yeah, we accept tips.
Yeah, we accept them.
It's crazy. All right. Already asked you that. Okay. So winding down, two more questions left. What advice would you give to a stylist who's listening, who their dream is to open a salon?
Yeah. I always say really explore your why, really dig deep into why you want to have a salon and what those reasons are. And is it for mentorship? Is it to help other people grow? It is a huge responsibility to hold people's employment in your hands. And then really dive deep. We've kind of talked about this already into, are you an artist who just loves to do hair, or are you someone who really likes, you know, organizational systems, leadership, management, that type of a thing, and dive deep into that, because it's not just about, you know, having your own beautiful, pretty space and, you know, calling it yours. There's a lot of responsibility. And so it's really just first taking the time to ask yourself, do I feel like I am passionate about doing those other things? And if the answer is yes, go for it. If you're like, you know what, actually, no, I really love doing hair full time. I love being creative, passion. Maybe there's a way to grow that isn't salon ownership, you know?
I love it. It's a big deal to hold someone's employment in your hands.
Huge, huge. I think about that on the regular, and I have so much gratitude that people trust me. I mean, this is how they take care of their families and their kids. And that's huge. It's a big, big responsibility. And I never, ever take that for granted.
Yeah. I think that's the quote of the episode. It's a big freaking deal. I love it. Last question is for the salon owner listening, and we may have new salon owners, long-term salon owners. Maybe we have some salon owners who are stuck in their ways. What do you think every salon owner should know or realize today in
2023? That our job as a salon owner is to keep our stylists happy, to grow them and to support them and to have their backs. I think that we get so, again, sometimes we get wrapped up in it's my business and my way. Then we've also had this long-term mentality of like the client's always right. And that's just not true in my opinion. And I have a little motto that I think, you know, if I were to share this with salon owners, it would be happy stylist equal happy clients. And if you have happy stylist plus happy clients, you have a happy leader.
Love it. Amazing. Thank you so much, Kelly. It's so nice to like meet you on Zoom and, you know, chat and get to know you. I think what you're doing is amazing. And I want to thank you so much for making the time today, because this series means so much to me. It's been so fun to record, and every guest, I just love, you know, the experience of getting to know you all. And just thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait to listen to all the other ones.
It's going to be good. You're going to love it. But let them know where they could find you, or if you want to talk about any of your stuff before we hop off.
Yeah, you can find me. I'm always over on Instagram. I love putting up, you know, free content to just kind of help inspire. That Scissors Makes Sense. And then you can see all of my resources on my website, which is www.scissorsmakesense.com. I've got some free resources. I wrote a book. It's a great way to start. It's a $14 purchase on Amazon. And it really gives you just a good introduction to kind of my 12-step business process of how I run my business. So yeah, all great resources there.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Kelly. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to Salon Ownership Unfiltered. This series has been so fun to record. I've learned so much from all of the amazing guests, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to provide this amazing free resource to all of you. It wouldn't be possible without all of my sponsors, my mastermind group, and Educate with Influence, because those amazing people and businesses support this free education. So please check out all all the sponsors. Visit GinaBianca.com/podcast to get all of the information and more resources attached to this episode. I would also love to encourage you to leave a rating and review if you're loving the podcast. All right, that's it. I'll talk to you guys soon and hope you have a wonderful day, and I'll see you on the next one.